Christina Lake Cannabis is using proprietary outdoor genetics to grow and harvest cannabis in Western Canada. And with a 99-acre expansion, production should increase from nearly 72,000 pounds to a harvest capacity of over 194,000 pounds of high-quality, refined cannabis to extract exceptional THC and CBD oils. This cannabis highlight has been brought to you by Christina Lake Cannabis, U.S. trading symbol CLCFF, and in Canada CLC. ChristinaLakeCannabis.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome Michael Yan. Patreon.com is where to watch Michael. Michael is in Panama City, having returned from Tapachula, Mexico. His journey was part of his discovery of the Great Migration ongoing globally, and this portion has to do with people coming from many countries into South America, Ecuador, Brazil, making their way to Colombia by bus or by means necessary. And then from Colombia, because the Panama Highway ends for 60 or 70 miles, they must traverse a jungle, the Darien Gap, the Darien National Forest, a triple canopy jungle filled with marauders and dangers. Michael has tracked this for some time. There's a good route, an expensive good route. There's a dangerous, not so expensive route. Everyone takes a risk going into that jungle. Michael has followed a family, a young Haitian family, from when he met them on the Colombia side of the Darien Gap at the end of the highway, traversing an inlet. They traverse from one side of the water to the other, land in Colombia, and then they're facing the mountains and the jungle to walk to Bayo Chiquito, which is the Umbara indigenous people village that receives them. From there, they're taken by dugout canoe, dangerously, up a river that is filled with dangers, including flash floods, to a center front camp, that's the Border Patrol of Panama, where they're processed and put on a bus for $65 or whatever they have, and driven to Costa Rica on their way north. Well, Michael saw them in Colombia. He then lost them, except for communication, as they traversed the Darien Gap, went through Costa Rica and all of Central America to wind up in Tapachula, Mexico, which is the first city in Mexico that you enter, going north to the Mexican border. The ambition of this young family is to get into America, where they have friends waiting for them. Michael, I summarize this incredible journey you and your colleagues have been on for weeks and weeks and months, but you've just returned from Tapachula, where you visited with the young Haitian family. First of all, how is their health? How are they living in Tapachula? And what are their immediate plans of getting to the Mexican border? Good evening to you, Michael.
Good evening. I'm watching the rain fall on the runway here next to the Panama Canal. And their health is good up in Tapachula, Mexico. Medese, she's 15 or 16 years old. We get different answers every time from her and her mother. And her brother, Michael, 12 or 13. So those three went through Darien Gap together, very rugged. They saw quite a few people die, terrible. And finally they made it up there. So they've been up. We first met them on March 3rd, 2021 down in Colombia, preparing to go into the Darien Gap. So now we flew up there and went to Tapachula, Mexico. They're living in a very not nice, let's say, apartment, if you want to call it that. It's got a couple of beds on the floor. They do have a television and it's very hot. They have a metal roof that's straight to the sky. But it's $134 a month, as I recall. We interviewed them about six times over a period of about 3 days and, took them to a nice restaurant. Their spirits are actually quite high, based on what they've gone through, which is, really tough. I mean, it's the kind of stuff that would put a lot of people on a psychologist's couch. But, it's interesting, though, because their mother, she's Haitian, they're Haitians, their mother is clearly very loving, and she's like a, captain mother, I mean, they've been through war together, but she's a very strong leader, and the children clearly look up to her, And so their spirits are quite high, actually. Despite what they've been through, they're like, Medese is always saying, you know, with God's will, we shall prevail. We're going to make it. She's always, you know, throwing in, you know, something about how the Lord will see them through. And so her spirits are strong and always smiling, and she could be a motivational speaker. So we interviewed them over about six different times, and they talked about how they plan to get to the Texas border as soon as they can clear Tapachula. They're actually waiting for two more Haitians to come through Colombia to get through Darien Gap. So when they get there, they will try to, when the two next Haitians get there, the five of them will try to move north up into the United States. They're actually scouting for which detention center to get detained at. So they're getting information back from other Haitians who are already up there. They want to know which one's the nicest one to stay in, because they feel, they sense that once they get to the United States and get detained, they'll be detained for some length of time, which could be months. So they want to be in the most comfortable position they can get in, and then be released, and then go to New Jersey where they have family.
Do they have people who've done this journey before whom they're in contact with, done the journey recently?
Yes, they do. Some are already up and are already in the United States. You might have remembered a few months ago in March, we said that one girl was going through in a wheelchair, and we predicted she would die. She did not die. In fact, her brother took her through the Darien Gap. We have photos and videos of them, you know, going in, and we're just like, they're going to die. And they didn't, miraculously. And apparently she's in the United States now. We're trying to track her down. We may find her, because we got her brother's contact information. And it was her brother who very heroically got this, you know, his Haitian sister into the United. That guy deserves a medal. Anybody that can carry somebody, they didn't carry the wheelchair, that's been abandoned somewhere, but anybody who can carry somebody on their back through Darien Gap, I mean, that's an Olympic athlete and a superstar. I mean, that's America material right there, if nothing else is.
And now the people who are in ahead of them, are they all in communication with Tapachula? And is Tapachula in communication with the two Haitians who are in Colombia?
Just Medese and her mother, they're in contact. Those were other Haitians that they knew from Chile, actually. They're not family, but they knew them from Chile. Now, keep in mind, in Medese's group, I believe, what was it? I don't recall now, 10 or 11 or 12 actually died. So, I mean, it wasn't like they all made it. A lot of people die. And also, Medese and her mother told us many more stories about what happened out there. For instance, they got lost numerous times in the jungle. They were out, went for at one time 2 days with no food, and they were quite skinny when they came out. They showed us, they gave us photos, and we had photos of them just before they went in, and they were, you know, well marbled before they went in. They were not well marbled when they came out. They were gristled, but they found other groups that were. The thing is when they're out in the jungle, if you've ever been in jungle before, there's a lot of false trails that either from game or people that, as they told us, the Haitian family of Medese told us, you know, people searching for food, they're hungry. So they strike off on a different trail, and then more people start following that trail. And the next thing you know, you've got a false trail. And so they would run into entire other groups out there that were lost, like submarines lost in the dark sea. And, you know, that jungle out there, my estimate is that about 10% actually die. Chuck Holton, he's a very experienced war correspondent. He's been with me every step of the way, and then he's been doing this for about 20 years. He thinks it's more about 1 in 7 die. He might be closer to accurate, which is more than 10%. But certainly, to be directionally accurate, a good roughly 10% are dying as they go through.
All right.
So
trip. Did you learn anything about their trip through Costa Rica, through Nicaragua, Honduras, Guatemala? Did they have adventures or difficulties in those countries?
Yes, they did. Once they got through the Darien Gap, it was not difficult for them for that short period in the detention or the reception center, as they call them in Panama. But then they put them on the bus to Costa Rica, and they had a sort of a riot here in Panama first, and now we know what that riot was about. It was in the news, actually, but we only in these interviews did we find out what it was about. One of the babies died, and I told you that back in about April. There was a baby that died about 8 months old, I think, and we have a photo of the baby, and they left it, and the authorities had left it out in the open for all day, and that made the Haitians go into a riot. So according to Medese and her family, that riot that we saw in the news was about that baby not being covered up. And so then anyway, they made it through, they made it into Costa Rica without much difficulty. They then made it to Nicaragua, but then in Nicaragua, they got some more, let's say, adventures. For instance, avoiding authorities and having to go under an electric fence, which was crackling. And they were, you know, they, even as they recounted that, their eyes got big. You know, they said that the coyote had to hold open, had to hold up the fence with a, with some kind of rag or towel not to touch it. And it was crackling and there were like monkey bones around the thing. So they, that fence is in their memories. And then there was quite a few other sort of, you might call them adventures like that, being ripped off many times. Likewise happened in Honduras. They were hungry again in Honduras. Finally, they
Were there refugee camps in Nicaragua or Honduras the way there are in Costa Rica?
Not like in Costa Rica and Panama. Panama and Costa Rica have a set program. They call it controlled flow. And in the controlled flow program, if you check into it, in other words, if you come into their camp at Bajo Chiquito, the village we keep talking about in different interviews, if you come into that, you'll go into the controlled flow program, at which point you'll be in these, you'll have, you know, nice tents. Oh, after you get out of Bajo Chiquito, that's pretty nasty there. But once you get to San Vicente camp or Lajas Blancas camp, then it gets, well, let me qualify that. The missionaries that we were just having breakfast with yesterday, they said that the water at Lajas Blancas has gotten a lot worse. They don't have enough water. They don't have in many of the, and same with San Vicente camp in Panama. So they're still having, even after they get into the controlled flow program, the migrants still have very serious difficulties with enough food and water.
I take it, Michael, that it's a difficult journey. That's why I'm asking you to recount what you learned from Medese, her brother Michael, and their mother as they make their way north. When we come back, I'm going to ask you about Honduras and Guatemala, because these are the three countries, Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador, that are said to be the source of the migration at the Mexican border. We know that's not accurate, so I'll ask what people they met as they traversed Nicaragua, Honduras, and Guatemala to reach Tapachula. Michael Yan, patreon.com is where you can find Michael, his videos, his reports, his remarks, and he's traveling with journalists because they were compiling the story of the great migration, not from the Northern Triangle, but from the rest of the planet through Panama. I'm John Batchelor.
Christina Lake Cannabis is using proprietary outdoor genetics to grow and harvest cannabis in Western Canada. And with a 99-acre expansion, production should increase from nearly 72,000 pounds to a harvest capacity of over 194,000 pounds of high-quality, refined cannabis to extract exceptional THC and CBD oils. This cannabis highlight has been brought to you by Christina Lake Cannabis, U.S. trading symbol CLCFF and the Canada CLC. ChristinaLakeCannabis.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.